and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Across the country, demonstrators are protesting President Trump's actions during the first 2 weeks of his term. Reporter Chris Fox is in Austin, Texas, where there's a protest outside the state capitol.
The anti-Trump protest organized by the 50-51 movement. 50 protests, 50 states, one day.
President Trump has signed an executive order banning transgender women and girls from women's sports.
Under the Trump administration, we will defend the proud tradition of female athletes, and we will not allow men to beat up, injure, and cheat our women and our girls.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio is defending the administration's plan to drastically revamp USAID.
This is not about ending foreign aid. It is about structuring it in a way that furthers the national interest of the United States.
Rubio says many of the agency's programs will continue under the State Department. Hundreds of people, including members of Congress, rallied outside the U.S. Capitol today, showing their support for USAID. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin Office of the Commissioner of Insurance have announced record-breaking enrollment through the Affordable Care Act. Brittany Merlot has the story.
Over 313,000 Wisconsin residents signed up for health insurance on the individual marketplace during the 2025 open enrollment period. That increase represents an 18% boost over last year and is the highest enrollment the state has ever seen. Governor Evers said the enrollment jump shows how important defending the system is.
A new study finds that car insurance rates will increase in Wisconsin this year, but not as much as in previous years or in other states. The study was conducted by the insurance agency Insurify, which says car insurance rates in Wisconsin are expected to increase about 3% this year. The expected increase is significantly lower than last year's increase of 22%, and the average cost of car insurance in the state is expected to be about $700 lower than the national average. Only 11 states are predicted to have cheaper rates. The Women Who Weld event will happen at Mid-State Technical College next week. This unique opportunity is for women 12 years of age and up to explore careers in welding. It will take place at Mid-State's Advanced Manufacturing, Engineering Technology and Apprenticeship, or AMETA Center in Stevens Point. The date is Thursday, February 13th from 5 to 8:30 p.m. This is a free opportunity and no welding experience is necessary. Women Who Weld is a night of inspiration, networking, and hands-on insights. You can register at mstc.edu. The 77th Annual Meeting and Awards Banquet for the Heart of Wisconsin Chamber will be held on March 6th. You can register now to secure your spot by visiting the Heart of Wisconsin Chamber website. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks make a deal. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports. Milwaukee is sending Chris Middleton to Washington. The Bucks are trading Middleton and A.J. Johnson to the Wizards in exchange for Kyle Kuzma and Wisconsin native Patrick Baldwin Jr., as well as a second-round draft pick. A pick swap was also included in the deal. Middleton, a three-time All-Star, helped the Bucks win the 2021 NBA title. He signed a three-year, $93 million contract before last season. The NBA trade deadline is tomorrow afternoon. The Bucks take on the Charlotte Hornets tonight with a tip time of 6 p.m. The WIAA has approved a change to its high school football playoff qualification process. The Board of Control voted this morning to create a wins-based metric for teams to get into the postseason. The new setup will also seed teams in the playoffs, eliminating the need for computer algorithms or coaches voting. In addition, the WIAA also expanded the 8-player football playoff field to 32 teams and moved the start of the season up 1 week to match the start of 11-player football. With Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Increasing clouds with a few flurries flying around this afternoon and light snow ramping up in the evening. It may mix with a little bit of freezing rain overnight, creating some icy spots in the morning. Snowfall totals look to stay under an inch, but it'll be breezy tomorrow, blowing and drifting it around. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 22 degrees.
Experience love on the air with WFHR and WIRI. Now through February 13th, tune in Monday through Friday for your chance to win an unforgettable Valentine experience. Romantic dinner for two, exclusive tickets to the Bachelors on Broadway show, a blissful couple's massage, and a stunning gold bracelet. Make this Valentine's Day truly special by showering your loved one with exquisite gifts from our cherished locally owned businesses. All thanks to WFHR and WIRI. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to celebrate love on the air.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me this week as we talk to my friend and national figure Adam Kinzinger in what will be certain to be an incredible conversation.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Wednesday, February 5th, 2025. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. And welcoming into the studio for the entire hour, Wood County Sheriff Sean Becker in with us today. Sean, good to see you.
Great to see you.
Oh, and there we go. There we go. I got you on the wrong one there. Sorry about that. Thanks for being here, Sean.
I used to be muted sometimes.
We also want to send a big shout-out to our friends over at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Love our friends over there. Appreciate the work that they do. Do yourself a favor. If you haven't already done so, go to YouTube, type in your search bar, Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, subscribe to their page and keep up to date with the amazing work that they are doing over there. Appreciate so much everything that you guys do over there, man. So, Sean, we got a number of different things that we can start with. Where do you want to start?
How cold it was at the polar plunge.
So darn cold. I wanted to get to that eventually.
Let's get it out of the way.
How did that go?
Oh, it went great. We talk about it every year, before the event and then after. It's just that great partnership that we have, law enforcement has with Special Olympics. So last week, it was out at Anchor Bay. The folks there just doing an awesome job hosting. It's been out there for a few years. And the water was cold, as it always is. And Mike Weiberg, one of my, best friends, he oversees rescue. And he was in the water with a couple other people from rescue volunteering their time just to make sure everybody gets out of the water safely. And he said that, the last couple of years, every time I see you jump in, you just look miserable. I'm like, well, what do you think? I want to wrestle with you in the water like we did a few years ago, but I just don't think that would be a good thing for you to do. And I'm like, well, don't challenge me, but I think you're probably right. But the Sheriff's Department, again, in a team, we've been doing it over 10 years. I don't know exactly how much money that we've raised for Special Olympics, but it's in the thousands, and we always appreciate the people that are supporting not only the event, but our team to get out there. And this year, we had five people jump, and Macy, one of our night shift corrections officers, she raised the most money, over $1,000 for Special Olympics. So a big, big shout out to Macy and then everybody else that jumped too. Somebody just joined us that day. When our transport officer Carrie said, "Hey, I'm coming to watch, but I think I'll just jump." And I brought a shirt. I'm like, "Okay," and she's never done it before. I'm like,
"Right on,
all right." But no, everybody that came out and supported the cause, I'm very proud of them, our team, and the community to be out there. Southbound came and they donated their time to have one of our premier bands from the area out there. And like I said, the host at Anchor Bay just do a phenomenal job to put on an event. This coming weekend, we've got the Raider Run, the Keller Knights, a snowmobile club that I'm part of. They're putting on, again, the host at Anchor Bay, make sure that happens. And so if you're not doing anything this coming weekend, I think the racing starts, or the time trials, however you want to call them, around 10 a.m. where registration is, and then I'll go throughout the day. But a great fundraiser for the Keller Knights Snowmobile Club, and an opportunity to locally get to use your machines, because it doesn't happen very often. But it might after this weekend. I'm hearing that we're going to be getting some snow.
Yeah.
But highlighting all the snowmobile clubs. I mean, that's what people sometimes forget, what it takes to, run the trail system. And it's all by private clubs with, the state helping out with supporting, the grooming. But there's so much more to, you know, having a snowmobile trail. People just seem to forget that all the trail system primarily is privately owned, and you have to really give a shout out to the landowners that allow people to be on their property. And unfortunately, that's where we come into a part of this as law enforcement officers. When people decide to abuse that, you know, that's where we're going to take enforcement action, because what that does when people especially go off trail, that really puts that route, that trail, in jeopardy, because the property owner is going to get sick of it and they're going to say, all right, no more. And we have no recourse. You know, and that's unfortunate, but, big shout out to all of the clubs that oversee their trail systems. Hopefully with the dumping that we get here in central Wisconsin this weekend will put us in a opportunity to open up our trail system. So it's a great sport, but
to that point, and I had in my notes, I wanted to talk about this, sure, because I think a lot of people might have seen in the news over the week that there's going to be a number of trails opening up in the state. To your point, we're going to be having a little more snow, so yeah, we are going to have some trails that are going to be opening up, and I thought it was a great opportunity, yeah, not only with that, but with the recent conversation. One of the more popular things in this town, yeah, the last couple of weeks, if not months, has been the ATV-UTV yeah ordinance that's gone around. So all of these things happening in unison right now, I thought was a good opportunity to touch on the things you're talking about right now. And a reminder to all snowmobilers out there and ATV users out there, that those that have not voted for this ordinance to pass are watching with a keen eye. Be on yeah your best behavior, man. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be otherwise, and I'm not even saying that necessarily that people should be right to be nitpicking or anything like that. I'm not on a side on this one. Right. I'm really Switzerland on this one. I'm going with the community yeah on it. It's very rare yeah that I am that. I usually have an opinion, but with this one, I really don't. I don't act like I know better. I know that I don't know. I know that I don't. This isn't my thing. So I'm literally taking back seat and just taking in the information right from people like you and other citizens. I do know that much, though. I do know that I've heard from community members that are very on tune with this and paying yeah attention. And yeah, something to keep in mind, to your point about being just treating these trails good and treating the property owners well.
Right. No, and that's especially with the snowmobile aspect of it. The UTV stuff, ATV stuff that has been going on throughout the state, not exclusively just to the city of Wisconsin Rapids. They'll figure it out, you know, whether they want to go one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, they'll figure it out. I think that my always suggestion is take a look at what other communities have done, you know, and how has it worked for them? How hasn't it worked for them? And then you have an ordinance that you can, you know, create that, you know, makes it safer for everybody, you know. But again, it'll take some time. They'll work it out either way. I just, like I said, even people that are supportive or not supportive of it, or they're kind of on the fence, I think take the time to look at what other communities are doing. You know, I always say, look at what the Township of Grand Rapids did. That's where I live. And I think they did it perfectly by, you know, looking at it. They have an ordinance that I feel is very reasonable. They started out with only opening up certain routes throughout the townships, kind of tested it, and then kind of moved it forward. You know, seeing, hey, we're not having the issues that we kind of anticipated, and now all of the roads are open. And same with Wood County. You know, going through our Highway Commissioner Roland Hawk did a phenomenal job by looking at all the county highways, you know, looking at the, you know, ones that are traveled more, and maybe we shouldn't have, you know, UTVs and ATVs on them, but here's a route system that, you know, we established thinking of safety. And, you know, and we haven't had, you know, the major issues. We've had some crashes, but in comparison to other motor vehicle crashes, they're lower. So, you know, like I said, the city, like I suggest, just take a look at, you know, what other communities are doing. City of Marshfield's open. You know, hey, what's happening? You know, what kind of issues are going on? What complaints are you getting? What are the positives? Mm-hmm. You know, what are the things that we don't like? You know, yeah. I really think that's the best way for everybody, on no matter how you feel about it, to become informed. Look at what other communities have done, and I think that's probably the best way to sway how you are going to, you know, move forward with it, you know, especially with the city council at Wisconsin Rapids, because I know that they're going to take it up again, I think, sometime this month, from what I understand. And I think now that you got an opportunity as somebody that lives in this city to do some research. If it's a hard no, then let your city council person know. If you're on the fence, do some research.
And that's I think that's a great note for anything going forward when it comes to voting, when it comes to any of these things. Do your homework. You know, look into multiple sources and ask people, talk to people. And I think you come up with your answers. And I agree with you that this is going to get figured out one way or the other. It's just a matter of time, I think. I know that, for the audience that doesn't see the videos or know behind the curtain here a little bit, Sheriff Becker always comes in here and brings his A game and brings a ton of material for us to talk about. And I want to get to every bit of it. And I appreciate that you do that so much, man. But I did want to ask you, especially because it is happening right now, and we have a chance to talk about this in real time, that there is an Amber Alert out, and remind people about that Amber Alert, and that there is a pregnant 16-year-old girl out there that we're trying to find, and that. Now, hopefully most people have heard that by now. Certainly the resources of the Amber Alert and the way that we get these updates and everything seems like most people, whether through their phone or their TV, have heard about it. But I don't think we take a lot of time to think about what it is like for law enforcement in this situation, how you guys react to this, and what we can do to help you do your job in this scenario.
Call us. Bottom line, once the information goes out on Amber Alert or Silver Alert, that kind of information, those programs have been out for a while. And what's been happening for us that helps us is two things. One, the continued community support. You see something, you call us right away. And then technology. We can talk a little bit about the Flock camera system that's been out throughout the country. And once you get a situation like an Amber Alert, it works on two levels. One, the public notification, what's happening right now, where the news media sources are covering it. It's getting out to your cell phones. So everybody, there's an awareness thing out there. And then what we encourage people to do, if you see it, call us, get us a call right away, because there's some certain guidelines that we have to file for either an Amber Alert or a Silver Alert in order to make sure it qualifies to go through this. And once it meets that threshold, all right, that information is something that we need the public's help. And so if we're having an Amber Alert out there, it's a serious situation. So now with the technology aspect of it, with the camera systems that are out there that aid law enforcement, say whatever this vehicle, the suspect is a 40-year-old with the 16-year-old who's pregnant, is out there. The vehicle along with the license plates are alerted when they go by these cameras that, like I said, that are all throughout the state and the country. So that's going to help us because, that information goes right to law enforcement right away if they go by. Well, we did hear that the suspect has changed license plates, but as we get that information, we can update the information that goes into this camera system. So you look at the technology aspect of it, which is, you got to love it. Some people might not like it as far as criminals, but on the other aspect of it, it does make the public safer. But the thing to highlight, though, once the information is out there as an Amber or Silver Alert, you can trust it. It met that threshold of there's somebody that is at risk. We want your help. You see something, please call it in.
Appreciate that. And thank you for the rundown of it, too. And as a side note, I watched one episode of CSI and straightened me out, man. I don't know why anybody does anything anymore. You cannot get away with anything. I don't even know why you should be putting you out of business. It's just a complete side note. And trying to find a light moment here to keep the conversation going, certainly. Yeah, thank you for that breakdown, though. I appreciate
hopefully,
that.
Hopefully we can come up with the 16-year-old sooner than later and get her in a safe place.
Where did you want to go next, sir?
Well, again, just highlighting the polar plunge, Cole Cleworth, he started off again. He's plunged over 10 years, a great friend of mine. Again, he got out in the community and raised a lot of money, so appreciate all that he does for, Special Olympics and his leadership. So a big shout out to Cole and his parents. Next thing, 10 and 186. We've had quite a few accidents and fatalities there. And it's an awareness piece. If you're paying attention to our Facebook page, we've been putting a lot of posts out there in reference to that particular intersection and the awareness of Highway 10 from Marshfield all the way to the county line at Portage County. There's a lot of cross traffic there, not just exclusively at 10 and 186, but there's other intersections. And the unfortunate thing that's been happening in that stretch is the crashes and wrong-way drivers. The primary thing with the crashes that you're seeing are people are either failing to stop in the median or failing to yield, and then you have a T-bone kind of crash. We had a tragedy last January where Casey Rampton was killed. And, the family, to their credit, You know, they're still grieving, but they want change. You know, and you know, we sat down and talked with the family, and they're willing to you know, push something forward in Casey's name, which I give them a lot of credit, especially, you know, under the circumstances where this happened recently. But you know, they want to bring awareness to make sure that, you know, something changes at especially the intersection at 10 and 186, where there's some modifications there, some safety modifications that will prevent any other tragedies in the future. And, you know, obviously, probably wouldn't make it the safest, and we've discussed this as an overpass, but that's going to be a challenge because of the funding aspect of it. Now, you have to work with Department of Transportation. You know, our highway commissioner, our highway department can't just go and say we're putting an overpass there, or even change the signage. Yeah. You know, do a lighted stop sign or something else for rumble strips or something. All that has to be approved by DOT, and that's a process. And I'm not, by all means, you know, bashing Department of Transportation. It's the unfortunate thing. It just takes time to work through their guidelines and their requirements to make any type of changes. But, you know, what we're doing is reaching out to all of our local representatives, you know, everybody that has any connection to, you know, that stretch of the highway in Wood County. And we're talking, you know, Pat Teston, Tom Tiffany, just a list of everybody, John Spiros, and they've been very receptive to, all right, well, let's look at this. All right, you know, what can we do to help move something along to make some changes, you know, not only at that intersection, but maybe, you know, throughout, you know, that stretch of Highway 10. You know, and I want to thank all the people that are in the community that have stepped up and wrote letters, especially the family. You know, I mean, from, you know, the mother that put together, I know it was very, very hard for her to write. But, you know, she did it. And, you know, we posted that. And I think those are the types of letters from family that, you know, people can, you know, I could say something all day long, but, you know, I'm not the person that, you know, it does affect us as law enforcement officers and first responders and EMS, but who's dealing with it at a long term for the rest of their lives? And that's the family. And I give them, you know, a lot of credit. They're willing to share it and willing to push for some change to make, you know, at least that particular intersection safer in, you know, in Casey's name. You know, and like I said, this is still something that is very fresh in their minds. But, you know, again, just thank you to all of our local representatives and our county board. They passed a resolution just requesting the Department of Transportation to, you know, consider safety changes, including, mm-hmm. not exclusively to an overpass, but including, you know, that discussion. Because I know that there is some, you know, opposition to an overpass as we, you know, talk to some community members because it affects property in the area. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. You know, I'm always going to fall on the public safety side of things. And yes, an overpass would most likely or would take care of that cross traffic, and we wouldn't have those type of collisions anymore. But I'm not ignoring the fact of the impact it has on other people around there. And I appreciate the, you know, their safety suggestions and saying, hey, we don't want an overpass per se, mm-hmm. but, you know, we still agree that there needs to be some changes in safety measures. So I appreciate the people that are willing to step up because, mm-hmm. you know, for me, that would be hard for me to do because knowing that people died at that intersection and you want to somehow oppose it. But yeah. if you come to the table and say, this is why, mm-hmm. but I totally agree that, you know, we need to make some changes there to make right. it safer. And I think that that's a good compromise to at least discuss. You know, for me, you know, I'll, like I said, as a public safety measure, yeah, put an overpass there. But I know that that's not that easy to do. And mm-hmm. there needs to be some continued discussion. And there has been, and I can promise that we will continue to do that because I'm strongly in favor of changing something there to make that intersection safer. You know, in comparison to that stretch of Highway 10, and I don't know why. You know, I wish I had a good answer. But
that's my question. If this is a newer issue? Is this a new problem? Is this something that has been an issue for years, for decades? It's not as if this intersection is new.
No, it's not. I believe around 2011 is when the new Highway 10 area or that highway, U.S. Highway 10 highway, was redone from many years ago because it was dangerous, and it became a four-lane highway. And it stretches all the way to Appleton as a four-lane, you know, highway. And, you know, there, if you look in I'm not picking on anything, you look at Portage County, you know, I don't think that there's any cross traffic, you know, where Wood County has cross traffic. And it's like, why? And Kevin Yeske, the superintendent from the Auburndale School District, that just people should look at his letter because of the facts that he found and the questions he brought up really make you ask, well, why? You know, why in this stretch, but, you know, other stretches in other counties, you know, there isn't the cross traffic, especially at a state highway that's intersecting a U.S. highway. And like I said, the challenge for the county is we can't just go out and change signage. That all has to be approved through DOT because they control the state highway and the U.S. highway. So, you know, it's something that, you know, like I said, we're not going to walk away from. We're going to work with DOT and hopefully get something, you know, changed. No, not only at that intersection, but other, you know, parts of Highway 10 to at least change, you know, signage or something to make, you know, that whole stretch safer for people to travel. It's just, we're getting a lot of wrong way drivers. Some are local. We had a terrible fatality where somebody went the wrong way and had a head on collision not that long ago on 10, you know, and what can we change to prevent these? And, you know, I was an accident reconstructionist for several years, was assigned to the patrol division. And a lot of things that were brought up to me, were, well, most of these collisions or tragedies are driver error. I'm like, well, most crashes are driver error. Okay. Something the driver did caused a crash. But I think what, you know, as public officials and leaders, what we have to do is look at environments that can cut down on a driver error. All right. I mean, you could point the finger all day at that driver that caused the crash, but what in the environment could have prevented that driver error? You know, and I learned that rather early on in my reconstruction career that, you know, my instructors would say, drivers cause 99% or whatever the percentage is of crashes, you know, but you still have to look at the environment that could take that factor away from that individual driver from, you know, making a mistake that could cost somebody's life. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing. So again, we're going to stay at this. We're going to keep moving forward. As always, I appreciate our county board to take a look at, you know, the issues that we have going on that affect all of us. And they passed the resolution, which, you know, really just, I don't think it really puts DOT on notice, but at least makes them aware that, you know, our elected officials here in the county are concerned about this. So let's work together to make some changes to make, you know, the area safer for all of us to travel.
You hit it on the head. What the answers might be, I don't know, but I know that we'll get them coming together. We'll get them working together like adults, like we did with the jail and like we did with other projects in this area that may have seen years ago. Like, I don't know if this is ever going to happen. And then, boom, this happens. It's something very similar with this or like we were talking about with the ETV, UTV ordinance or any of these things. The way we get answers is together and working together on it. Appreciate that the time on this one, sir. We're going to take a quick time out. We'll be back with more with Sheriff Sean Becker and our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Media here at Midday Magazine at WFHR.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Donald Trump is president again, and Democrats need to take a new approach to combat this presidency. Part of that is recognizing the realignment of how we arrived here. In last year's election, one thing Trump did successfully was turn out people who might not otherwise vote. In Wisconsin, he increased his vote share in all 72 counties en route to the largest popular vote total in state history. How did he do this? Well, as I see it, there are two factions of Republicans. One is the more traditional country club Republicans. The other is the newer group, what I'm calling the pro-wrestling Republicans. In my latest column, I wrote about how Donald Trump transformed the party by prioritizing the pro-wrestling Republicans, and why recognizing this new reality is critical to Democrats' ability to grab a steel chair of their own and fight back. Subscribe and read it now at the Recombobulation Area.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media.
Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Portage County is hosting a concealed carry weapons class in April. The Portage County Sheriff's Office will host the CCW class on Saturday, April 26th from 8 to noon. The cost is $50 per student. In the afternoon, they are also offering a basic handgun course from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Portage County Law Enforcement Range. This course is available to those who attend the morning CCW class for an additional $25. You can find out more information and register by calling the Sheriff's Office. The number to register is 715-346-1819. Next week is the annual observance of National 211 Day. February 11th, or 211, celebrates the go-to 24/7 three-digit resource that helps millions of people in the U.S. and Canada. The three-digit service connects information about resources and services available in your community. United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties recognizes the Vital Community Hotline. Based on the latest 211 impact survey data, over 5,000 requests came in through the service in Wisconsin Rapids alone. In the nation, that number is over 20 million. February 11th will be 211 Day in Wisconsin Rapids to signify the importance of and need to strengthen the 211 resource. The City of Wisconsin Rapids is hiring for summer positions at the Aquatic Center. There are multiple positions open in the Aquatic Center and also recreation positions at the Petting Zoo and as instructors. People as young as 15 may apply for specific positions. Age requirements are detailed in the job postings. You have until April 12th to apply. You can find more information at wirapids.org. Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr. will be performing at the Spash Theater in Stevens Point on February 27th through March 1st. You can find more information at playhousepresents.com. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. A new reboot is on the way, which is not a surprise, as Hollywood seems determined to remake everything it's ever done. This time, it's a new iteration of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Star of the original, Sarah Michelle Gellar, will be part of the cast, but not the central focus. This is the second attempt at a reboot. One in 2018 did not quite make it to the little screen. When and if the show drops, it will premiere on Hulu. During a recent appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, actress Nicole Kidman told the host about her favorite keepsake, the handwritten lyrics to Elton John's famous song, Your Song. Kidman was one of the stars of Moulin Rouge, in which the song was featured and sang by Ewan McGregor. Your Song has been covered many times over the years. Great tune. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Increasing clouds with a few flurries flying around this afternoon and light snow ramping up in the evening. It may mix with a little bit of freezing rain overnight, creating some icy spots in the morning. Snowfall totals look to stay under an inch, but it'll be breezy tomorrow, blowing and drifting it around. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 22 degrees.
Hey there, this is Carrie Joy with today's Work Money Minute and a little bit of tough love about investing in collectibles. I'm going to say this as nicely as I can. Collectibles are just not good investments. Comic books, Beanie Babies, World War II memorabilia, American Girl doll stuff. They just don't math out as investments. Now, collecting as a hobby that brings you joy is perfectly fine if you can afford it. Just don't confuse the fun of the hunt with the potential for profits. And importantly, they are illiquid, meaning you can't turn it into cash in a pinch like you can with a real security like a stock. Now, I'm not saying you got to stop collecting whatever you enjoy. Just make sure you're paying down your high-interest debt like credit cards and saving for retirement. For more tips on saving more and spending less, search up Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
Maggie Dawn.
In the 3 o'clock hour with my special guest co-host Tom Paulsiewicz, we discuss how Trump's heartless ethnic purges will make you and your family less safe right here in Wisconsin.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Welcome back, everybody, to Midday Magazine. For this Wednesday, February 5th, 2025, I have your host, James, here. We're joined by our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Media, and our good friend, Sheriff Sean Becker, is with us right now. Sean, got another half an hour here to hang out. Where do you want to start?
We had a prayer walk through our new jail. We were just talking off air, you know, where the project is, and we're really close to moving in. And that started, you know, the project itself, I mean, there was stressful moments as you went through. But now as you see how close we are and it's coming down just a couple of little things, it's like, okay, it's not only happening, it's happened, mm-hmm. you know. And again, I always reflect on what it took to get there, and it's always something to say about teamwork and all of our elected officials, not only county board, but everybody that looked at it and saw the need and got out in the community and explained the need. And now we're here, and all the tours that we've done the last couple of years, it's just been really enlightening, and very proud of our community that, you know, stood up and not only supported, but then he even came in to tour everything. And like I said, it's getting down to just, you know, making sure all the locking mechanisms for the doors are working, you know. And you have to, one thing that I think has stressed, you know, people out, you have to count on other vendors to get the project done. And now when it gets this close, it's like, all right, come on, hurry up, get it done.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've waited, you know, 20 or a couple decades, if not more, to get where we're at. And I've told people, and I even told myself, I'm like, all right, what's another week? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's going to be so, when we don't have to write WAPACA check anymore, and which is right around the corner, I mean, that's a big deal, because every month we're spending, you know, just with transport costs, close to $100,000. You know, so, I mean, that's going to be, you know, off our table. But, you know, just, you know, and for the employees, the staff, and, you know, when can we move in, and, you know, and getting this close is pretty huge. But starting what I said, our jail chaplain, Lonnie Selgi, wanted to put together a prayer walkthrough, you know, with members of our community that are part of clergy's, you know, different denominations that wanted just to come in and, you know, walk around each floor and pray for the facility. The people are going to be in it, you know, that they're there for making mistakes in their life, and they're now in custody, but just to pray for them to, you know, once they get released, they don't come back. That was a big part of, you know, what everybody was talking about. And then, you know, walking through the facility, and then praying for the staff. You know, I was taken back by what, you know, some of the people were saying, and then just brings back that community support that's out there at many different levels. I was very, very proud of Lonnie for putting this together. I've never done something like that before. It just kind of gives us a time to reflect on, like for me, what it took to get somewhere that, you know, we were told would never happen in our careers, and here we are, you know, it's just a very proud moment, for not just the Sheriff's Department, but I think, you know, the community.
Agreed. I second everything you're saying there, and it's very exciting, very happy for the getting so much closer to the moving in part of this and everything. Curious about you talk about the inmates that are in WAPACA and some of that, will those inmates be being transferred back to here, and how does that work?
Well, that'll be a good Ted Ashbeck question. No, we've got a plan for that. I think that we'll probably either, you know, do it in shifts where we'll get as many, because we have about 75 people there. We have an average that we pay for. So that's not going to be something, you know, very easy, whether we, you know, work it out with buses. But that's in the works on, because that's a priority. That's what I would like to see, bringing those inmates back first, because now we're not paying WAPACA, and then maybe that's how we kind of work our way into the new facility, because you have four floors, and, you know, maybe we won't utilize one right away, but hey, let's get, you know, the second and third floor working with, you know, that 75, and then start bringing people over from, you know, our current facility. But once we get the, okay, it's going to happen fast, and you know, our staff will, you know, they're getting ready for it. We're training them to, you know, that's another factor that we have to, you know, look at is, all right, is the staff ready? And I believe they are. But it's, like I said, it's completely different facility from what they're working in right now. But it's once we get operational, it's going to be easier. meaning that we have, you know, we can see everybody from the command posts that are within the facility, where now our corrections officer put on a lot of foot traffic, because every half hour they're checking on inmates. If they're on a mental health watch, it's less. It's every 15 minutes. And that means you're walking down and looking into a cell. With this new facility, with the pod design, you're seeing right in there from the camp command post. Observation post.
Would appreciate those kind of notes, especially for many in the community that, God willing, they don't have to necessarily go to the jail. So they might not see some of these. But we are looking, always appreciate tours and things like that, and people being able to take it in. I admit a couple of things here. First and foremost, I've talked with you in the audience many times about my past and my family's past. I have shared that I am a hyper empath. I was diagnosed with that as a kid. So I admit that I come to this topic a little differently. And first and foremost to me, what matters is the you and the officer's safety and the people that are working there. That by far and away. But I will say one other part of this that I find is a very big part of this. You mentioned that these inmates from WPAC are coming back here. Mm-hmm. Most of these inmates are Wisconsin Rapids residents,
correct,
which means their family is here. And you know this better than I do. But as a kid, my father, in and out, And when I was a kid in Illinois and this would happen, and we'd have to go to Cook County or something like that, we didn't know if we were going to get to see him that day. It may be open to be able to, but there was no if there was going to be room for us to be able to walk in to see him and some of those things. When my father was in the Rapids jail, we were able to see him every time. And we were able to do that. And that was integral, not just for my family to survive that time, but for my father to get to where he is now, to where he finally came back around. For these inmates to be back in town, this is not the biggest part of this story or anything like that, but you and I, our very first conversation about stopping this revolving door of inmates, part of how you stop that is them having a connection, a support system, and not thinking that this is the end. What do I got to lose? That's the last thing we want. And having them being closer to their family and being able to do those things is going to, by the stats alone, is going to lead to more of that revolving door stopping. There's so many layers to this that I don't think we've even noticed yet or been able to, because we're not experiencing it. We're not seeing it. In real time, we'll be able to. This is just a positive on many, many levels. And again, don't want to take lightly and skate past the safety issue or anything. That's first and foremost in my heart and most people's. But man, I got to say that these other part of these things here, we're going to see the dividends of it. We're going to see, and I don't think you can put a price tag on some of that.
No, you're right. And, you know, I appreciate you speaking from personal experience, because a lot of people don't share that. You know, there is, you know, the hurt of, you know, having a loved one in custody, no matter what they did. You know, and you do see some situations that are very unfortunate, that family is not there and we don't have that foundation at home. Then you do see that revolving door that you bring up. And it's hard for a family to, like you've expressed, when you don't get the opportunity to see a loved one in, you know, in incarcerated, that hurts the family too, you know, and sometimes that's what it takes for somebody to change as well. It might take a while, but if people don't give up, you know, on somebody within their family, you know, whether it's a parent or a child or a niece, nephew, cousin, you know, if you have that foundation, I think that's an opportunity for somebody to build upon while they're in custody and to return to the community to still have some support. You know, I've seen it before where, you know, the family is at their wit's end and they decide to walk. And you know, I maybe there's a reason for that. I'm sure in that individual's mind that there is. And I understand that to some level, but look at the path it might take. But maybe somebody, and again, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, mental health, drug abuse, how much that is combined and how much that affects people. And I've seen, you know, parents say, I have done everything. And then you look at the path it takes, and then that individual has to look at that and say, I hope that's a trigger mechanism for that person to say, all right, I've got to try something else because I'm hurting people, and especially my family. Now, what opportunities do I have while I'm in custody to help me change my path? And that's where I think that throughout the years, and we've talked about it, that the inmate programming that we're continuing to invest in I think will pay the dividends out as we move forward in the future. And, you know, when you see somebody out in the community that is being successful, you know, for me, that's a win. You know, and then you look at what we're talking about right now, look at the win that is for a family. You know, if you got somebody that's taking advantage of, you know, the MA programming, the NAA, working with Three Bridges, working on, you know, with our counselors that are available, you know, our jail discharge planner, you put all that those things, and that's just a small part of this. And if somebody's willing to do that while they're in custody and they go out and become successful, we're all a winner there. And then you look at the impact, like you just explained a few minutes ago, how that has a positive impact on a family when you have somebody that's been incarcerated, returns to the community, works, starts providing for not just themselves, but their family. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, that means we did our job on the corrections side of things, and as far as not just the sheriff's department, but everything else that we connect to, whether it's human services or other outreach programs that want to come into the jail to help. That's a huge win for all of us.
And these individuals that commit these crimes, accountability is incredibly important, and they need to do what they need to do to make that right. But the families didn't do anything. The families, the kids especially, didn't do anything. And I didn't plan on this, but bringing this up and talking about it triggered something in me where I got teary-eyed thinking about my little sister not being able to see her father and things like that. Like, she didn't do anything wrong. So the act of being able to do this has such a deeper impact than the individual that is serving time. Yeah. There are other victims. There are other people. I don't like to use that word, but there are other people affected by this. So by these individuals being back in town, you're not just helping those individuals and them have a better life. You're not just helping your community and then making future taxpayers or anything, but we're preventing future trauma. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's so many layers to this that is important to have this jail in place.
You said it, trauma, you know, and how that affects everybody differently, and that affects a family. Like you said, you know, your sister, that's something that you or your sister are never going to forget. However, you know, seeing the success of your father now is something that to be very proud of.
Yeah.
You know, and you could put, it's not behind you, it's there. But look what it took to get here.
My father is one of the most boring people you will meet now. I love it. I love it. I love him for it. I love it. I guarantee you right now he's playing with his baseball cards. It's exactly what he's doing right now.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Been there, done that, nope. Still do it.
No bias at all up to that, though. Where do you want to go next, sir?
Doug Christensen. He's been on the show before. He's retiring.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, he let me know last week. And it was pretty emotional. He got hired shortly after I did at the Sheriff's Department, started his career with the State Patrol. I'll try to get him here next month, just before, because his last date's going to be the 18th of March. I know it wasn't an easy decision for him, but, you know, family's first. And, you know, unfortunately, cops don't live long after they retire. So I think he's got a really good plan of what's next. And I'm very proud of him for a lot of things, and I brought him up on the show before, and on the foundation that has been laid, you know, in regards to mental health and law enforcement. You know, when I had a previous position before sheriff, he was kind of a pain, you know, but we had, you know, some things changed in the system with dealing with mental health and law enforcement and commitments, and he really struggled with it, and he didn't stop, you know, and what he did is really, you know, brought training to our department. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about CAT and how we now do that every year, and every, you know, all of our, at least on the patrol side of things, we're trying to get all of our corrections officers through that training, because I believe in it. I've been through it, but that foundation of the start of it really came from Doug. I remember the first training that we sent him to. This is a long time ago. You know, he's struggling. I talked to some people in crisis about, hey, what can we do to change something? We sent them to a training with a bunch of social workers. And he didn't identify as a law enforcement officer. And he got the opportunity to hear how social workers felt about law enforcement and, you know, on the mental health realm of things, and listen to, you know, how they complained about us. And then towards the end of the training, he said, well, I'm a law enforcement officer. And then I think people got quiet. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of the foundation of at least the training aspect of it. So in the system, we might get, frustrated with crisis and the social workers that are part of that. But then look at on the flip side, how they're, frustrated with us. And then that built, into CIT. He went to, over to the Appleton area to CIT, and he came back with just all these awesome ideas. Mm-hmm. And then we start sending people to CIT, and then that grew into now we have our own CIT, program. And I'm very proud of that because it brings in how we can work with the community that helps us recognize when people are going through a mental health crisis. And there's also a big aspect of it, of the officer wellness piece as well. Mm-hmm. It's a 40-hour training that is so worth it, where we partner with NAMI and many members of the community, and that's grown. And I'm very proud of Doug. And then Katie Siz is who we worked with really to build, our CIT program and our mental health connection into the community with law enforcement. And what did it lead to? Around 4 years ago, we got a legacy grant that we wrote to add a position at the Sheriff's Department and have a mental health deputy, basically an investigator that's assigned to mental health and into the community and also our wellness. And we still have that position today, and he let that foundation to it that it's going to be tough for somebody to step into. But he really made the position work. Got involved with a lot of boards like Mary's Place, and that's just one thing. I mean, he's got out in the community and has been just a heck of a resource for, just the piece of law enforcement and mental health. We talked about the stigma about it and how we've been doing. I think a great job breaking that stigma. It's okay to get help. I've done it. I'm proud to say it. And I know he has, and he's one of the resources that our department's had for several years, so we're going to miss him, but I'm very proud of the career path he took with an organization, because I really think it brought about change, within, law enforcement and mental health and how we do things when we deal with those, welfare checks, and then, connecting people to the resources out in the community that are struggling, because everybody does.
Yeah. I don't use the word lightly, but a trailblazer, a true trailblazer in this regard. And part of the reason individuals like him, we are now with this topic where we're talking more about mental health, and we're not talking about it in a hushed voice and some of those things. You need people like that, and specifically people in powers, in strong positions, to be able to do that. When we see people like that doing things, we are much more inclined to listen and hear things out. That's a great legacy, a great career.
The foundation that he's part of will be felt. Even after it's time for me to retire, I don't see, even with a leadership change, that people walk away from, because you can't.
Yeah.
It's grown so much within, our profession that you can't ignore it, and it's a big component of it.
So, well said. Yeah. Wrapping up with Sheriff Sean Becker, just a couple more minutes left, sir. And I wanted to bring up the news broke recently that Lincoln head football coach Tony Biola is going to be retiring. Certainly a big name in this area for a long time. And I know he meant a lot to you. Means a lot to you. I don't want to say
that lightly. Yeah, he sure does. That's a tough one. He gave me the opportunity 10 years ago to be part of his team, the coaching staff. And we go back many, many years to college. We came into UWSP the same year. Both went and tried out for football, and that's when the relationship really continued. And it was really, really awesome to see that he got hired at Lincoln High School as a FIAD teacher. And then, here I'm in Wood County. And then, my wife wasn't really happy when I made the commitment to coach, but because of the time commitment. However, she knew where the passion was, and it's something that I love to do and to be part of. And I knew that the time would come, but that's his decision to make. And he's done a huge thing for this community, and you just look at all the kids that he coached. I know he's head coach, I believe, 19 years, but it goes beyond that. I mean, especially when you're a teacher and you're involved in athletics, you're going to connect with a lot of kids, and I'm really happy for him. You know, I know it probably wasn't an easy decision for him. You know, I thought towards the end of the season, I couldn't put a percentage on it, but I'm sure it was a consideration maybe that it was time to move forward or come back. You know, I don't think he just wants to hand over the program to just anybody. I think he's given somebody, by making this announcement now, somebody the opportunity to come in for the district to find to get, you know, some time to prepare for next season. Because I think it means a lot to him, but I know he's still going to coach track. He's still heavily involved with powerlifting. But it's still fresh with me, you know, that, okay, it's here and he's moving on. You know, for me, I don't know what is in store for me as far as coaching. I've got put a lot of thought into it. It might be time for me to at least take a little bit of time in the fall. And the biggest reason why is my daughter, Jordan. You know, she's expecting, we're expecting our first grandchild.
Mazel tov.
Yeah. So she's set, or I don't know if you want to say set, she's delivery time is sometime in July, mm-hmm. I think mid-July. So, I mean, that's on the table. So I was going to probably step aside for at least the time being.
Yeah.
But getting back to Tony, I mean, it's just I'm very proud of the career that he's had. And then ending the season how we did this year was pretty awesome. You know, it's a back-to-badge game, and we win it with the last second, touchdown. I mean, 100th win. What a way to go out.
I was going
to
say, if you're going to go, I mean, you know, that might help a little bit of making that decision and everything. Because, boy, what a game to go out on. Yeah, in a moment. That was fantastic.
Honestly, before he made the announcement, because I saved the clip on my Facebook page, and and I watched it, and I'm like, God, that was just an awesome moment.
Awesome work, awesome legacy for him, and a great career. And he ain't going anywhere. We'll still see him around and talk to him. And appreciation to him and appreciation to you, your team over there. Appreciate you guys so much. Yeah. Safe travels out there. Thank you so much for the time again. And we'll talk again next month, sir.
Sounds like a plan.
Big thank you to our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media again as well. We appreciate the work that they do. We'll have more Midday Magazine coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Open that conversation with this person that you disagree with so much by trying to find the shared value, the thing that you both actually agree about. Challenge yourself to keep bringing it back to the value that we agree on and maybe even the outcome that we wish to see. Go have the tough conversation, because you know what gets better with practice? Those tough conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Locally grown radio, WFHR, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome TV writer and executive producer of The Soup, KP Anderson, and comedian Ben Katzner drops by to discuss his upcoming show in Green Bay. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. The Todd Alba Show.
The argument from my former party has been, it's not the guns, it's mental health. Well, no worries, folks. Governor Evers has got you covered. He introduced a plan to put millions of dollars into mental health, particularly for young kids. And the Republicans in the chamber did not clap. If you can't be it for kids, then what the heck can you be for? Jeepers, criminy.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief. President Trump has signed an executive order banning transgender athletes from female sports.
From now on, women's sports will be only for women.
Schools that don't comply could lose their federal funding. At state capitals across the country, demonstrators are protesting many of Trump's actions during his first 2 weeks in office. This woman is protesting in Vermont.
I'm angry because I feel like this nation is full of sexists and racists, and that's why we're right here today.
More countries are condemning President Trump's suggestion that Palestinians be resettled and the U.S. take over Gaza. This man says he will not leave Gaza.
This president, who is called Donald Trump, comes to us with a new method to displace us from our country where we are rooted. This is our land. We will not get out of it.
The UN's chief is warning against ethnic cleansing in Gaza. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8